The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of The Undercurrent, a show that goes beneath the surface to find people who are doing remarkable things in and around the world of hockey, people we think you should meet. I'm your host, Tara Sloan. Some of you know I spent 8 seasons crisscrossing Canada on a show called Rogers Hometown Hockey in search of stories that got to the heart of the game. We covered incredible stuff. We met incredible people. We logged an incredible number of miles. But if you're like me and you pay close attention, you know there has been turmoil in the hockey world, and some of the darker parts of the culture have been unearthed, particularly in Canada, where I'm from, where hockey's governing body has come under intense scrutiny of late. Being a fan can be disheartening. But those of us who love hockey, we love it a lot. We love it so much, and we want nothing more than to shine a light on the good stuff. So all that to say is when I met today's guest, I swear to you, I almost started to cry because I needed to be reminded of how amazing a space hockey can be and provide, and of how much kindness there is in the world. Jared Woosley is a literal rock star. In fact, his band Five Speed was around at exactly the same time as my band Joy Drop back in the late 90s and early 2000s. We actually know a lot of the same people from that universe. But unlike me, I went from music to broadcasting, very forward-facing. And Jared knew his next journey would involve helping others. So after his music career wound down, Jared joined One Step Beyond. It's an amazing organization dedicated to providing programs and services to people with intellectual disabilities and their families so they can fully participate in their community. Jared started as a music teacher, but he's a lifelong hockey lover, and through that, he saw an opportunity to enhance the lives of the people he worked with through getting them on the ice, and he has been doing that through any means necessary. It's unbelievable what he does. He runs One Step Hockey. He is partnered with both the Arizona Coyotes and the San Jose Sharks. He is truly changing lives, and I just want to read you a quote. This is from Jen O'Brien. She's the executive director of the American Special Hockey Association. She called Jared the most underestimated, underappreciated person in hockey. He has zero ego and no agenda. He just wants to give anyone and everyone a chance to be who they are. That's what he does. The world needs more Jared Woosleys. Meet Jared. Jared, it's so nice to see you again. We had the chance to meet up in person just a few days ago, and now we get to convene again for this conversation. And I'm going to start by asking you a question that I've been asked hundreds of times, and I've never actually asked it of anyone else. How does a musician end up in hockey?
Oh, man. Well, I guess growing up with hockey and abandoning hockey for music, and then you always come back and find hockey later in life because it gets in your blood, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know Bad Religion?
Of course I do.
Yeah. So like on Warped Tour, I remember I was going through the bus areas and they had hockey sticks lined up on their tour bus. And I think it was like the Mighty Mighty Boston's and Bad Religion would always play street hockey and stuff up front. Correct me if I'm wrong. I might be wrong, but.
I'm sure you're right.
But I was like, other hockey players on tour. But yeah, I guess it's just, it's something you do as a kid, you fall in love with, and then it's just the way it worked out.
It's just the way it worked out. And
they go beautifully together.
I think so too. I think a lot of people have this assumption that it's like this really odd trajectory. And it's not. And in our lives, everything leads to the next thing. And yeah. we do tend to come full circle. So maybe for you, let's start at the beginning. You know, where did you grow up and how did hockey come into your life?
Well, I grew up, well, until age 9, I grew up in San Jose. And then I moved to Arizona at age 9. I got into hockey because my father was a goalie and he grew up in Alaska, and I'm third generation goalie. My grandpa was as well. And it just became something that at a very early age, I remember being like 3 years old and wrapping my arms around his, you know, brown leather goalie pad and just smelling it. I think I fell in love with the smell. It was kind of weird. Yeah. The smells of hockey these days are way different than the smells of hockey, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. A little more leather, a little less like synthetic sweat grossness.
Bring the leather back. Yeah, and I remember there was wood on in Santa Clara. On when you stepped out into the ice, there was a wood barrier there. So that wood was like frozen wet. And just the smell. I still to this day remember the smells of my father's gloves and his pads. And if they made a cologne out of it, I wear it every day.
Okay. Well, just log that thought for another time for the next career incarnation you have. So, I mean, but hockey, you were taking it pretty seriously at one point, were you not?
Yeah, I was. You know, I played travel. My dad, thank God. My father was really supportive with my hockey, and you know, he loved to be involved in everything. And he's one of those hockey dads that, you know, had to be there and had to be involved. And so yeah, some of my earliest memories of playing hockey are like being on travel teams and traveling with my father. And we did that, oh God, all the way up to midgets. And I forget the year now. God, it must have been 96 or 7 when I went to the Olympic Training Center. I ranked first in the Rocky Mountain region in goaltending, and got to go represent the Rocky Mountain region at the Olympic Training Center for the which was really rad. You know, just about when I was ready to head off to a hockey prep school when I was 18, that's when I found music, and kind of my dad went, no, you know, like he had a good friend of ours, is a guy named Randy Exelby, who played for the Montreal Canadiens. He was a goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens, and he played for the Phoenix Roadrunners here in town. And present day, he's the founder, and like he owns all of the Behind the Mask hockey shops. He created Behind the Mask.
Right.
And they sell nationwide, but he has got 4 or 5 locations in Arizona, and kind of monopoly. He's the monopoly. I mean, just because he's been around for so long, we support, you know, our community, and he was a small business back then, and he's just grown, and they're the best hockey shop, I think, around. But my father and him were really good friends. And so my dad had a really good business sense, and I think helped him start the first Behind the Mask hockey shop, which was like rollerblades and pogs at the time. And
yeah,
and, in exchange, I got to, you know, get individualized training and support from Randy, who became a lifelong friend of mine, a family friend. I don't know if you've ever seen that episode of Home Improvement with the puck machine.
No, I have to plead ignorance now.
Well, that was Randy's, and they used for the episode. But he had that, and if you can imagine, in 112 degree heat in Arizona, Randy was shooting that puck machine at me, you know, on the daily. When I was a kid, just working on my glove hand, my ball hand, and making
sure
that's
a pretty serious decision to make, right? Because I mean, you're destined for a prep school. When you say prep school, you talk about places like Shattuck St. Mary's, right? Where Sidney Crosby went.
Yes.
So to make a decision in your life, okay, like I am making this decision to follow a different path.
And I wanted to go. I really did, but I wanted to go because my friends went, and I loved hockey, of course, but I wanted to go because that was what my friends were doing, and I felt like I was, I don't know, I wanted to go play at that level and experience and play hockey every day, but that's because I was so in love with hockey. The second I found a new love, which was music and playing in a band, my motivation shifted a little bit. And yeah, if thank goodness the music career went kind of okay, because if it hadn't, oh, I would have broke my dad's heart. I did at first, but then when things started to turn out okay, he was like, okay, all right, I'll support you in this. And yeah, we played on the men's league together growing up, in our 20s and 30s, and we got to enjoy music and hockey together for his lifetime. Yeah.
I mean, so your music career is long, and like you say, you had success, major label record deals and Vans Warped Tour and lots of touring, and that's a podcast episode in itself. Because I know you had ups and downs, both personally, label wise. I know how hard it is to be in a band. It's like you're married to three or four people, or adding your crew, and it's another few at least. So, but I guess maybe in a nutshell, just give us a little sense of the path that music took you through.
Oh, well, it showed me the world. I got to meet a lot of people. I was forced to grow up really fast in an environment where you shouldn't grow up. But I think, well, I mean, I guess you should, but it put me on a trajectory where, you had to make adult decisions even though you weren't an adult, and some of those decisions were the wrong decisions, and some of them just so happened. Luckily for me, every time I flipped a coin, we did okay. It was a life changer, and I get to see the sights and see the world, and I loved it. I loved it to death. And when that ended, I wouldn't say we got dropped from the record label. They just stopped paying our bills. Right? They were like, good, stay on, work for free. That kind of thing. But when that ended, in a sense, I had a really unique opportunity to discover a passion, which was working with individuals with disabilities and intellectual disabilities. My mother has polio, and she had it when she was three, and she was disabled from the waist down, growing up from three on, and had many struggles. I grew up watching those struggles and how she dealt with them, and in the 70s and stuff, in the 80s. If you have any disability that sets you apart from the typical public, it can be harsh. And my mom tells this famous story of when I was around six or seven, in the grocery store, I walked with a limp like her, and she was like, "Don't, you don't." That's how I walk. I was just so used. I thought that that's how we walk. That's how we
Right.
walk. But that's always been a part of my life. So when I found One Step Beyond, an organization that helps create opportunities and grow opportunities for individuals who have disabilities and intellectual disabilities, I immediately fell in love with it. And music was the first thing that I did there. They found out that I was a musician right away. I don't. It was. I did a really bad job in hiding it.
That you're a musician?
I did a horrible job at hiding that. So a lot of the parents I'm still really close with today, a lot of parents of participants that go to One Step Beyond, I'm very close with to this very day, and they always laugh and say, like, when they hired you, we were like, who is this dude with tattoos and dreadlocks that, oh my God, they hired this guy? But it turned out to be, I don't know, the real love of my life, and in a job where you kind of go from playing 3,000 seaters every night, and you're singing in a band, and you're living that life and your dream, and then it ends. Like, it's kind of like, how do you top that? How do you get a job that was my biggest thing. Like, I'm never gonna find anything that I love to do as much as this, and that sucks. Like, it's downhill from here. But I spent about 8 months in that mindset because it was so much better working for One Step. That brought a whole new light into my life, and something I never thought that I had a passion for that so much. And so, 5 years into working with One Step Beyond, I got offers to go back out on the road, which I really had to weigh out.
Oh
Ended up
boy.
not taking. But
Wow.
it worked out, and I don't regret a single decision in the music days till today. I don't regret any of it. Like, it's all been such an amazing, amazing journey.
I mean, there's, I think it happens in any career or any stage of life. But there is something, and I know this firsthand. I remember even I went from music to broadcasting. It's not that great a leap, really. But I remember, feeling like I had to shed this like Tara the rocker, Tara the rock singer moniker. And it was like really painful. And so, to find something, and I think the only thing that can top, something like that is the power of giving back, right? The power of like bringing joy and happiness to other people.
Yeah, if that's in your nature, if that's in your
Yeah,
heart,
right.
if you enjoy doing that. I mean, I hear it all the time from people that are like, you're so patient, like, I could never do what you do. And I'm like, you could never be friendly and kind and like help out somebody. Are you like, I don't get what you're saying. I don't understand. But no, that's a reality. A lot, I guess that there's, and like, I could never do what you do. God, kill me if I had to go into broadcasting. I'd be the
You're
worst.
doing just fine here, so you're great.
Oh God, I'd be a producer's nightmare. But, yeah, it's just we got lucky, I guess, right?
I mean,
You're still a Tara the Rocker to me and
well, think
Tara the podcast, so
and likewise. No, I mean, I think it's running through your veins, but
yeah.
I think there's little that can rival the sense of, giving somebody hope and happiness and just acts of generosity. So you start with One Step Beyond and you're teaching music. You're in Arizona, which is like not, it's, I know hockey is growing there. I know hockey exists there. But it's not like a given, like you would move into the hockey realm, say if you lived in somewhere in Canada, for instance. So how did you go from teaching music to introducing a hockey program? And why did you think people would be receptive, and were they?
Well, you got to know that when I started playing hockey in Arizona, there were two ice rinks. Now there's 10, and it's grown over the last 20 years significantly. We have high school hockey here. I begged my parents when I was a kid to move. Let's move to Minnesota. Let's move to Canada. Let's move anywhere where I can have a backyard rink.
Right.
So please, right? I did
You
that.
know that means it's freezing cold for like 7 months a year.
I
That's
was
what it comes
with
with.
it. To this day, I still want to do that. My wife, she's not okay with the cold. I don't know if it'll ever become a reality, but so hockey, I think a lot of people came from getting out of the cold, and their kids are like, what are we supposed to do now? And so hockey naturally grew that way. And Phoenix has always been a great spot. Arizona's always been a great spot for hockey. I think growing up, I had about half the players on my team were from the East Coast or different states, so it's always been, it's only gotten better in the last 20, 30 years. But I guess with our participants, I guess I found out that a few of our participants had brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers who were in the hockey community. And when I found that out, we just started talking. I think it just came about, it was ironically came about right after my dad passed. I mean, like 2 months after my dad passed. And it would have been something that he would have dove into full-heartedly. He would have loved to be involved with the One Step Hockey program. And it's kind of strange how it happened. But we had one individual at our program who is the middle brother of five. All of his other brothers played hockey. And he sat on the bleachers. He just watched. You know? And, like, there was never a spot for him other than the driveway to, like, get involved and give it a shot and try it out. So we started that hockey program and had, you know, for him, basically. And we're like, who wants to try ice hockey? And everyone's like, what's ice hockey? Sure. You know, had the courage to go out and do it. And it just grew from there. A lot of our players hopped into it, not knowing anything about it. But, you know, at One Step Beyond, there's theater, art, ceramics, cooking, you know, vocational, we have life skills, music, dance. We have so many things that they can explore, you know, any interest they want. We try and create that for them so that they can explore it, plus put them in a community to be involved with the local demographic in that.
Right.
And when it came to hockey, a lot of those players didn't really have a niche. They weren't really in the, you know, the other things we were providing, and we'll try hockey out. And that became their thing. That became their identity. And we saw it day one. And yeah, it was really neat to see those individuals who had never had a place, had a safe place to go out and just play and to be a part of a team. You know, being a part of a team is a big deal. And so that's what we did. We started a team, and the American Special Hockey Association helped us out and, like, helped me out and guided me into this very day. We have a tight relationship, just because whenever we need something, or I have a question, or if I hit a brick wall, they're always there to help me punch through it or figure out a way around it. And you know, it's evolved into just creating that space that anyone, no matter what your ability, if you have an interest and want to do it, like, we will find a way that you can. And it should be that way.
It should be always
just reserved for anyone that wants to try it out in a safe environment. Because, you know, it can be a little risky, it can be a little dangerous, it can be expensive.
Right. So, I mean, how do you, there's lots of things you'll encounter, right? I mean, not everybody has the same ability or disability. So you're talking about adaptive equipment of all kinds. I mean, what do you do when you don't know what to do? Who do you consult when you think, okay, I don't know exactly how to accommodate this person's disability, but there's gotta be a way. How do you tackle that?
Trial and error. And you reach out, and hopefully you run into people within your community that have ideas. If you can't tackle it yourself, I had a friend, I can't really mention their name on, but this individual was like, I can't play hockey, Jared. Look at my legs. I can barely walk. Like, how do you imagine me playing hockey?
Right.
So I'm like, well, you don't just give up just because you haven't tried it and you, because of this. So she had her orthopedic doctor make her these braces we took to the Behind the Mask Pro Shop, who they busted out the boot and they, like, you know, made these straps all around and put it underneath. And these braces allowed her to play, and she did play for many years, and loved it. And it's just, we've acquired different things, like, you know, we allow wheelchairs on the ice for those individuals that maybe might not want to get up right away, or maybe, you know, can't get up due to physical limitations. Sleds we're adapting to. We have a K trainer, which is a harness device for individuals who might not have any lower body mobility, right, but want to get out and feel what it's like to go out and like give it a shot. You know, they watch their favorite NHL team and they idolize those players, and to go out and have that experience on the ice. It's the same way with music. Our music program does an end of the year Abilities United Music Festival where they create a piece of music. But the main thing is the show. Like we put them under the lights, we put them under the haze and the lasers, you know, and they come out and they're a rock star for 5 minutes, and that gasses them for the year. It also gives, you know, an individual a confidence that, hey, I got out here, I did this. I can fill out a resume. I can get a job, I can get my license, I can go out and do things independently. I don't need, you know, I can do things myself. There are things I can accomplish that not everyone has the courage to do. And so you find a lot of courage there when you offer something like this, when they go out and do it. It's cool. It's too cool to witness.
I have to say, cool. I mean, I wish I could share with people sort of the, you know, the environment that I experienced at your one step meetup last week in San Jose. The one step sharks. I mean, it was just like, you know, first of all, I love that you refer to all of these team members as your friends, because they are your friends. You don't call them your clients or something like that.
No,
these are your friends, and you have hundreds of friends with whom you skate, you know. It's
hello.
Just the, you know, the love I felt coming into the locker room, how excited everybody was to get on the ice, how excited you were to be there with them. And, you know, speaking with some of the parents, and just what an absolute life changer it has been for their kids and their entire families to have this weekly gathering to look forward to.
It has been. I think about when it didn't exist. Yeah. And I also think about 10 years down the road. What's it just going to be that 1 week skate? You know?
It's
going to be like five more of them. Because I know that the demand is so much greater than the supply, like what we have right now.
Right.
And what we're able to do. I know that if we get the word out there, and that's in every city, in every state, like if it becomes more ready available for these individuals, because I still every year find people that contact me and we're like, we didn't know you existed until we saw this thing, or we didn't know you existed until we noticed this flyer at the rink. And that's going to constantly happen until it becomes something that just gets added into the docket of, I think it starts at the NHL level and works its way down. Mm-hmm. The more the NHL shouts out that this is something in every, you know, town, but then you get to the point where it's in the heart of whatever that town is, that city is, but people live on the outskirts and they can't drive all the way in, or it's a schedule conflict. So there needs to be arrangements for that. I think at every ice rink could probably, one ice time every month, even like that's starting at the bottom. And I think that's really doable to have one ice slot every month dedicated to that. Mm-hmm. And then just shout about it. Like let Special Olympics know, let all those organizations know, that's what's going on. And then put someone in charge of making sure that they have, you know, gear, which isn't that hard. Everyone talks about hockey being such a expensive sport. It is. Don't get me wrong.
It is. But yeah.
You tell me one rink that you know of that doesn't have a boiler room full of donated gear. You know, it might be.
People need a Jared in every rink to start digging through the stuff and go like, oh, that's where it lives.
That's where my talents lie.
That is
through the boiler rooms of rinks. Finding gear and
what I hear.
Broken down, smelly stuff, recycling it.
How many people started in Arizona, and how many are there now? Like when you first started this program?
I don't know. I think we had 25, like the first year. before COVID, we had 62, and we lost a bunch of players due to people moved and new people came in. It's just life changed. But yeah, we're still at that level, 60 to 70 in Arizona, and in San Jose, we're growing. We have 38 players. We would have a lot more. I get calls all the time from parents and individuals who want to play, but it's the most efficient for us to play during the week right now, in the middle of a weekday. And that's how it's in Arizona. That's how it is in San Jose. That's because ice time's more available during that time. I helped a friend start a program here in Arizona five years ago. And they started doing practices on Saturdays. And after one season, she was like, we are at max capacity. Right. Like, oh my God, there's people coming from everywhere. Like kids coming from all over. But that's because on a weekend, it's more ready available. And if, like I said, the demand's there, but not everyone can take time out of school and come. Right. Or like not everyone can find a way to get to the rink at 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock on a Wednesday. But we'll take what we can get for now. And
And go from there. So, I mean, I guess the question is, what's next? So you're in, you know, two markets with, you know, great relationships with NHL teams.
Yeah.
What's next?
I mean, we do want to, this year will be the very first the Arizona Cactus Cup is a huge hockey tournament here in Arizona. And a lot of teams from all over come to it. And they've always supported the administration that run it. They're such beauties and they help us. They've always dedicated a few of the championship game slots which used to be at the Gila River Arena in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Where the Coyotes play, and they would let us have like an exhibition game, and they supported us huge. And but it was really only a game either between our one Arizona team split up into two, or the One Step Sharks and the Coyotes. This year we're doing a full-on special hockey tournament and inviting people from all around the nation, and it's a go. We're doing a West Coast tournament, and I'd love to see more West Coast special hockey tournaments, adaptive hockey tournaments, unified hockey tournaments, you know, that's going to be all combined in this one. And I think it's really going to set the stage for, hey, we're over here doing this. If you want come, here's your, you know, here's where you go. Call us, come play. It's kind of like that. The more things like that you do, of course, it's fun to do them, but like anything else that you do out in the community, it waves a giant flag stick and we're here. Like like, give us a ring if you want to come be involved. We'll make it happen. And I just want to see that happen more all around.
You know, what do you want people to know about what happens when you make hockey accessible?
Well, I don't know. What did you see when you came the other week? You witnessed people having just a good time. I have one individual in San Jose that you met, and I you can't count the number of times that he says, "I love hockey." Like when he gets there, until he gets off the ice, "I love hockey." That's all he says. "I love hockey. This is so good. I'm so happy to be here." And like, I don't know. How can you deny that? Just that alone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be competitive. When I dream about skating on a pond, I've never skated on a pond or a lake, a frozen lake. But when I dream of myself skating on it, I'm by myself. You know, I'm skating all by myself out there in the dark. And that's kind of like, I think that when they go out there, it's a scary thing to do that. They're worried about getting hurt. They might fall. But at first, until they gain those hockey skills and want to become competitive. We just want to provide that safe spot. And I think that you fall in love with it really easy if there's no pressure.
Mm.
It's like music. If there's no pressure behind music, you really can fall in love with it. The second the pressure comes in and there's like a goal, you have to accomplish this thing, then it becomes not so fun.
Yeah,
that's how I've always run my programs. It's just a happy place to enjoy the game. And if you want to take it that next step, let's go that next step. And we've done that in Arizona. We had a group of individuals in Arizona that after 4 or 5 years of playing One Step Coyotes hockey, they were like, we want to be a little more competitive. Why can't we play in those adult leagues? What do we do? We started a very, you know, the very first adaptive unified team in the D League and out here in Arizona, and we were awful. My God, we were so bad. We got beat 11-0, 12-1 the whole first half of the season, and then they started to come together. And at the end of the season, we ended our season just last month with the very last game of the season being the championship game. And we lost it. We didn't win the championship, but it was so cool to see the players sad, but, you know, tap their sticks on the ice while the other team carried around the trophy. And I think that that was a lesson that meant more than winning. Sure. I think the humbilization of the sport has a lot to do with like honor, a lot of honor involved in the hockey, how you conduct yourself on the ice. It means a lot. And I couldn't be more proud of the individuals that took that step and did that.
This is the Top Shots. Top Shots team.
Yeah.
So I guess I should ask you, because I mean, you know, the parents that I was speaking to in San Jose were, they just felt like more people needed to know about this. And I don't know that you can accommodate too many more, but how do people find you? Because not only, you know, you're open to anybody who wants to join, but you're always looking for volunteers, right? So how do people find you?
Well, you can find us through the American Special Hockey Association, which is association, did I say that right? Special
close enough.
Yeah. it's a I always hate saying the word association, but specialhockey.org. There's a whole bunch of teams in every area in every city, and you can find them through there. Just look through the directory. You can find our programs in Arizona and San Jose through OSBI, One Step Beyond Inc., OSBI.org. And also you can find a program by just going and asking the individual at your rink. We have the special programs in Oakland that run on Friday nights, as well as San Jose, the youth programs, Special Sharks. So just because, you know, we have a program, but that doesn't mean we're the only one. There are others that operate in different times, different days. And just go to your rink and ask them, ask your hockey director. I'm pretty sure that every hockey director knows that, you know, every rink manager will know who's at their rink. And you can just ask them, is there adaptive hockey? Is there special hockey at your rink? What's the closest rink that that offers it? And they'll give you a phone number. They'll give you a lead. They'll give you an address.
They know for sure. Jared, I'm going to leave you with one last question. And, then we'll save our music conversation for part two for a different podcast, because that's interesting. And you and I have so much in common there.
We do.
But when it comes to hockey and One Step specifically, what has it given you?
Meaning? A life purpose? It's given my life purpose. That's what I think it's given me. I know what I'm supposed to do. Easy.
Yeah.
And I love doing it. So that's it.
Well, that was very clear watching you on the ice, watching you in the locker room. It's a really beautiful thing. And I can't thank you enough for joining me, for sharing your time with me, and for doing what you do. You bring a lot of light into a lot of people's lives.
Ditto.
Well, I certainly hope that conversation left you as inspired as it has left me. Jared, thank you for talking to me. Thank you for all that you do. And as we discussed, there are lots of ways to get in touch and learn more about One Step Hockey, so I will make sure I put all the relevant websites, etc., on all of my socials. And speaking of socials, I wanted to do a bit of a call out. You know, I'm pretty new to the Bay Area. I don't know everything and everyone around here. And I want to know who your hockey heroes are. Who are the people like Jared who are doing amazing work that we might not be aware of? So hit me up on Twitter at Tara Sloan, T-A-R-A-S-L-O-N-E. I am eager to learn more. So thank you for joining us for this second episode of The Undercurrent. I'll be back next week. Until then, keep your fins above water. Right? Might as well.